Good morning. I'd like to call the Citizens Oversight Committee meeting to order. First of all, we have the June 4th meeting minutes. Does anybody have any changes or have a motion to approve? Non-agenda items. Anybody have any, either from the public or from anyone else? Okay, construction and capital project update. I'm guessing it's Bill.
Good morning, Russ.
Good morning, Bill. How are you?
This morning I'll quickly cover four kind of major projects that we've got going on in the capital section, and then the expenditure plan, the strategic plan, rather. Larkspur extension is wrapping up nicely. We're moving towards testing and service at the end of the year. We're moving forward on the Windsor extension. We've got Heron South Point pathway under construction here in Petaluma. And one of our highest priorities has been the pedestrian safety enhancements throughout the alignment. So let me just run you through a bunch of slides and talk about stuff as we go. This is an aerial shot of San Rafael. To the right of the photo shows where we traded places with Francisco Boulevard at San Rafael Creek, switched places with the railroad tracks, put the tracks up against the freeway, and then 2nd Street right here near the freeway on-ramp, the T Transit Center, and then 3rd Street here. So it shows the reconstructed intersections that we did in the beginning of June. Huge push, weekend closures to get that work done, but worked out really well. A little bit on the area leading up to the station here. They're pouring the final flat work. The track is to the left side of the fence over here, and the station is in the distance. Bike lockers going in down at Larkspur at the station. Shot of the platform itself. Transit shelters in place. As you probably recall, we have a center platform at Larkspur. We have a long tail track that allows the storage of the train on the main line track and then a siding track so we can serve both sides of the terminal station. Parking lot has been paved out, curb and gutters in place, the lights are up, so that's all coming together, a little bit of fencing to wrap up, some striping and things like that. This is down along Francisco Boulevard, just kind of doing some of the final ballast placements, some of the final track alignment adjustment. This is San Rafael bicycle path that was added to the project as a change order. This connects Anderson Drive to Rice Drive, a really nice section of bike path that we fit in alongside our track and straddles the channel in some locations, and the city had a dedication of that last month. So at this point in the project, we're down to adjusting equipment, getting ready to start moving trains. Here, one of the signal maintainers is adjusting the crossing gates at the realigned Francisco Boulevard. And then installing the last signal house, the private crossing at Jacoby Street, kind of up above the waste transfer station. And then a shot of the Latini Transit Center, some of the pedestrian improvements we've made, some of the channelization, bringing pedestrians through here. We have a little bit more fencing and things to do down there, but that's all coming together nicely as well. Right now, we're scheduled to start dynamic testing, moving trains for the first time on August 23rd, a week from Friday, and that will be nighttime testing for a couple of weeks as we test the grade crossings, test the train control system, and the communication systems. Moving on to Windsor, we are in the midst of hiring a design-build civil contractor for the rest of the design and the track construction, all the bridges and civil. This was a site walk we did with the proposers, and just kind of a shot of the track there. So we're hoping to get design going by the end of the year and still trying to make the construction season next summer. Heron South Point, this right here in Petaluma, a really nice section of path, just over a mile. It has one long bridge over the upper reaches of the Petaluma River. This was last Friday. We were pouring the abutments for the bridge. The bridge is one of those off-site pedestrian bridges that comes and then is just set in place, and that's scheduled to be here in mid-September, so that pathway will be wrapping up, and I think it can into use by the end of the year, probably by Thanksgiving. And then finally, we've been doing a lot of pedestrian enhancement throughout the system. A lot of this just means putting in simple channelization, like in this photo, that forces people to break their stride and typically look down the track as they approach the grade crossing. So here's one in Robert Park, Golf Course Drive. We've added fencing here. We extended the tactile out. So if you're walking straight, you will literally run into fence before having to go around. And then the side fence hopefully keeps people on the sidewalk and out of the street. Similar treatments at Aaron Street. We also added these watch for train stencils on the sidewalk itself. So if you're looking down, hopefully you notice that as well. And then again here in Petaluma, similar treatments on this side. And that's it for the capital project update. Any questions?
I have a question about the Anderson Drive crossing. It doesn't seem to have gates for the automobiles. What was the difference there?
Anderson does have gates for the travel direction. I don't know if you saw it recently. Perhaps the gates hadn't been installed yet, but absolutely has gates. And it has the median as well to contain traffic so people can't go around the gates.
Okay. Maybe I was there too early.
It's possible. The poles went up, and they often don't put the gates on right away.
That's it. Thank you.
Yep.
2019 strategic plan review. Aaron?
And then in 2 weeks, we hope to do a final review, and then after that, it will go to the board for review. So the strategic plan this time is about our future stability as a transit district and as a service to the public. Our goal is to ensure that the rail and pathway system continues to serve the people of Sonoma and Marin. And how are we going to do that with the strategic plan is to give the history, the context, the details on the SMART system, and then give financial projections with different scenarios for the policymakers. And so just to give you an overview, what we're going to show you is that we believe SMART has a stable path forward that can continue its current service and can operate more service if the voters approve the early reauthorization of the existing sales tax in March of 2020. Renewing early will secure not only the current operations from Larkspur-Windsor, but also to Healdsburg and Cloverdale. We will need to continue our grant efforts, which have been very successful, in order to fund additional rail and path extensions. So that's what we're going to go through. That's what you'll find in the document as you walk through it. Just to review quickly, in the strategic plan, we go through the history of our strategic plans. This is our third. Many of you've all been here since the beginning, so you remember the 2009 plan. It was developed as the Great Recession was just starting. They were still trying to figure out the impact of it. But what ended up happening was there was a $6.6 million drop in revenue which was significant and unprecedented since the Great Recession in the 20s. So what that meant was over $100 million drop in the revenue stream over the 20 years from the original projections in 2008. And the timing of that was crucial because it was when we were trying to kick off this huge construction project and trying to bond for the amount that we needed. And so it required evaluation and the need for phasing, as you recall. In 2014, you'll recall that we weren't yet operating. We had made our phasing decisions, and we were working quickly to try to figure out how to go as far as possible with the amount of money we had in Measure Q. Originally, when we were originally phasing, we thought we could only go from San Rafael to Railroad Square, but with a little hard work and some good bid results and some good decision-making by our engineering department, we were able to add the Burnville station, the Atherton station, and then through the work of our grants and our general manager, we were able to get money for the Airport Boulevard station. So all of that was happening around that time. And here we are with the 2019 plan. We now have 44 miles of rail service. We have 18.4 miles of pathway. We are reaching 80% of the population we were targeting for service originally. We've carried over 1.4 million passengers, 129,000 bikes, 5,100 passengers in wheelchairs, and we have found that this has led to job creation and access to jobs, access to labor. It's spurred housing where we need housing in places like Rohnert Park. It's spurred retail and commercial where we need it. For example, BioMarin has said publicly that they chose their location and they've expanded their location because of the smart station, so that's good jobs for the people of the North Bay. And then our continuing success, despite all these challenges, despite this $100 million drop and the Great Recession and all of those things, we're still going forward. We are, as Bill talked about, we're completing Larkspur, we're completing downtown Novato Station, Windsor, the Petaluma second station, which you may have heard about. We are working in a public-private partnership to make that happen through a land swap. We have new pathways that we're going to work on in the next 2 years, Payerend to South Point, Payerend to Lakeville, South Point to Pengrove. We recently secured a $12 million grant for those. Those and also the Sonoma County Pathway Connectors, which includes 2.8 miles of, there are gaps in the pathway up there, and this is to fill those gaps from southwest Santa Rosa to Rohnert Park. So we're continuing to work, even though we had these challenges and we maxed out our sales tax, we're managing to figure out ways to get stuff done. And this is just a chart to say that, you know, through fiscal year 2018, we received $289 million in Measure Q sales tax, but we've been able to generate $323 million in other investment through grants from outside entities, and those have come from the state, they've come from the federal government, they've come from regional bridge toll funds and other local funds that might have gone to other regions. So in the sales tax financial projections, I'm going to walk you through revenues briefly, and I'm going to talk a little bit about expense, not too much, because we've talked about that a lot here. But let's just talk about the sales tax. Historically, it's been a stable revenue source in Sonoma and Marin. The only time it hasn't been a stable revenue source is during the Great Recession, which had unprecedented impact and, like I said, unfortunate timing. 23% revenue loss over the 3 years, and this is just repeats what I've already said, was in 2008 when they went to the voters, the 20-year revenue stream was $890 million. In 2009, it was adjusted down to $845 million, and now it's less than that. It's less than $700 million, over $100 million less. So the revenue stream is now recovering, but the impact was already felt, as we've talked about. So going forward in the strategic plan, we're using a growth projection of 3%. If you look at the 20-year history of our sales tax, including the recession, we have 3% growth. Since the recession, we've had 5.6% average annually. And And then if you look even farther at the 30-year history of the sales tax, no other recession has reduced revenue more than 5%. So I know that there's been some concerns about, you know, the recession and how it was so difficult and it impacted the project so much, but that we believe that was an unprecedented event. And if you look at the history of the 30-year sales tax, the smaller recessions are things that we are building against. We have our $17 million reserve that we've talked about, and that's what's important to us, is to keep that reserve going forward. The other revenues you'll see in the strategic plan are our fair revenues. We've had $7.4 million in the last 2 years. We're budgeting for $4.1 million this year. We believe that's achievable. And then I have some interesting statistics that we've been working on. If you look at our ridership to date, 56% of our riders have some form of discount. Our average fare per trip is $5.74. That's if you take all the riders and what type of fares they're using, how far they're going, that ends up being your average fare. The average length is 2 to 3 zones, or an estimated 24 miles per trip, which is a pretty good value, $5.74 to go 24 miles. Try that on an Uber. The projections forward assume a bump for when we open Windsor. Windsor is a huge station for us. There's a lot of housing and riders in Windsor, so we do have a 5% bump, but other than that, going forward, we're estimating a 3% growth over time in fare revenue. And then we have other revenues of $8.6 million, which includes our lease revenue, we have advertising revenue, we get reimbursements for certain things. We have significant state revenues due to the passage of SB 1. We've talked about this before, state rail assistance, state transit assistance. Those are significant. And then we have a smaller amount of federal revenue in the future. There's FTA funding for operations and capital that we'll be able to participate in starting next year. There's things like 5307 fund. They all have names that don't make sense in English, but we're projecting those in the future. And then for our expenditures going forward, we've used our budget as the basis for the future. In fiscal year 1920, our expenditures were $58 million. And the major categories, as we've talked about before, labor is about half of our costs. We have debt service that we're going to talk about in the next few slides. Safety and security is a big expense for us. State of good repair, which means evaluating when all of our systems need to be refurbished, replaced. We're including those costs going forward. Risk management, that's the cost of our insurance. Passenger amenities like Wi-Fi, fuel utilities, our PG&E bill is pretty significant because of our extensive signal system. And then pathway and right-of-way maintenance, 44 miles and more going forward is a lot of maintenance. So then talking about where we've been and where we're going, this is a slide that's going to talk a little bit about what we talked about briefly at our last meeting and what we talked about at the board meeting. So before the completion of the construction project that's operating today, our current service, we had reserve funds that were planned and used for the capital project. And then, as I mentioned, we created an operating reserve. And then based on the fiscal year 20 budget and our escalating debt service schedule, our costs are going to exceed our revenues and could deplete our available reserve if we don't make any changes going forward. These are all things we've talked about, but this is a chart that's a little bit hard to see. We can get you some copies of this. But basically, it goes backwards 2 years and then forwards 3 years, and it just shows how our operations revenue is steadily growing, but our expenses growing more, partly as a result of debt service, which starts to bump up in the future. And what happens if we don't make any changes is that we have to start dipping into reserves in a way that we don't want to do and we don't plan to do. So it just shows that our operating reserve, which is now $17 million, would start to deplete if no changes were made. This is, of course, a scenario that we are going to work to change. And then to give you, this chart's a little hard to see, we'll go and show you what it looks like in graphical form, and I'll hand this over to Sarah. I'm sorry, I forgot to introduce Sarah. You guys know her, but Sarah Hollenbeck from PFM, our financial advisor, she's been with us almost since the beginning, right? But it's been a while since you've been here, so.
It has been. It's a pleasure to see you again this morning. So picking up where Aaron left off, we're going to talk a little bit about the projections. Again, if the district were to proceed without the changes that Aaron referenced, the budget, as she said, expenses, including operations and debt service, would be projected to continue to exceed revenues every year through 2029. And I'm going to just skip ahead here so you can see the graphical representation. So at the bottom, you have a chart that reflects expenses in red. As you can see, they are above revenues currently, and in every year going forward, if there weren't adjustments to bring things into balance, that would continue to be the case, revenue being reflected in the green line. And the blue line at the bottom simply tracks the ending balance of reserves. And so as you can see, there's a little over 20 million in reserves as of fiscal 21. And if there weren't adjustments made to bring things into balance, that would be depleted, as was referenced. The estimate of the reductions needed to bring that future picture into balance is about $9 million. So that's in the scenario where status quo, the debt service continues to escalate as it is structured currently, and the sales tax sunsets in 2029. So what we've looked at here is we have a box.
The box is just appearing.
Yeah, the box is hanging out in space there, so we'll give you the thing that it belongs to. So what we've reviewed and evaluated is a 20-year extension of the sales tax, and what that enables the district to do is to extend and restructure the debt. If the current maturity of the debt is in 2029, and if you were to extend the sales tax, you could lengthen the debt out to 2049 and reduce annual payments from the current $18 million or so down to about six. So you would be generating or enjoying $12 million of annual savings. Overall, it wouldn't be savings, but providing additional capacity to afford the operations of the system. So again, the debt's not callable until March 1 of 2022. So in the meantime, as you can see in the graph at the bottom, the red line, the expense line, continues to exceed your revenue line in the next couple of years until you get to that point where you can call the bonds. And then, as the graph reflects, from 2023 forward, net revenue and reserves will be positive through the end of the projection period. It actually goes through the end of the tax at 2049. We were only showing you out through 2035 for the simple fact of having the graph be small enough that you wouldn't be able to read it if we project out all the way to 2049 here. Net revenue is estimated, positive net revenue in fiscal 23 of just over $3 million and forecast to grow annually. And what that could enable the SMART to do is to afford operations costs associated with going to Fieldsburg and Cloverdale if capital money can be, if their continued success in raising capital from other sources and other folks, other entities, provide capital to build those extensions. It does not, from this extension, our projection doesn't afford you enough capital to build those, but operating money is very hard to come by in transit, whereas capital money, more so, is available from others. So it's a very good story to be able to tell that this restructuring would give you the capacity to afford the operation of those extensions if you could find the money to build them.
Yes. Just one quick question. That reducing the debt service by $12 million is just $6 million something. That's level debt service at $6
million. Yes.
And no new money. That's just pure refunding.
Right. What that assumes, great question. So what that assumes is you restructure the debt at the call date. There's about $115 million of bonds that will be callable on March 1 of 2022. And we've assumed a restructuring out through that 2049 time frame at level debt service, and it's about $6.2 or $6.4 million in that range. so it would be level, and that would be advantageous just given, I mean, the structure we have is the structure that SMART needed at the time the bonds were issued, because the project at that time was to get the initial operating segment funded and built. And the way to do that was to have escalating debt service, which leveraged the expected growth in the tax, and that gave you the most proceeds, which enabled you to get to where you are today. But at this point, if, you know, given what we now know about operating costs, there's a need to look at restructuring that debt, reducing annual payments, and stretching them out, because the system's going to be here and serving people for more than the next, you know, 10 years. So there's some makes sense to stretch the debt out and give you that breathing room in terms of the annual costs.
Sarah, so the question I have is really regarding the sales tax growth. And when obviously we had a recession and that had a big impact, but what's the impact of what I'll call the Amazon effect? So much of retail is going there, and how much of, I guess, sales tax is not paid on those?
No, we. I can answer that because I see the data. A couple of years ago, the state came to an agreement with Amazon, and we started seeing money coming from Amazon, and they went from nowhere to suddenly showing up in our top 25. And then there was a court case recently that applied, it's called the Wayfair case, that I can't remember if it was state or federal, but basically it's leading to all of the internet sales above a certain level in the state of California will have to be taxed. And so there was a court case, and then there was state legislation clarifying the implementation of it and state regulations. So I haven't yet seen that change in the data because it's still too new. But the state is moving pretty steadily towards making sure the sales tax applies to anything that's delivered to the state of California. So it's starting to happen.
At this point, though, it's probably not 100% of sales. I don't really know.
It's not 100% for sure. Yeah. There are some holes there. Yeah. But the big sales, Wayfair is the company that's sort of competes with like the Targets of the world. And so the big retailers that have the biggest impact, it's starting to apply to them.
Because we've seen such a negative trend in retailers, and
right.
Certainly Marin and Sears gone, all these other,
right.
They're disappearing.
Right.
And that's obviously has to have a big impact on your numbers.
Yeah. I mean, it's had some impact, but what we're seeing is these shifts in the state is making up for that shift.
I was just going to ask about the added funds from restructuring the bonds, to what degree that will be used for capital construction versus operating costs to operate the agencies. Have you calculated that?
Right. So what we've projected here, I mean, I think what the restructuring of the debt would do is to provide, if you want to call it debt service relief, so provide additional, you know, reduce that, make available this estimated at $12.2 million, that the district could then make decisions about how to allocate that between, you know, if you operate it, it would cover the operating costs, projected operating costs associated with Healdsburg and Cloverdale, and not, if it's used in that way, it would not provide additional capacity to raise more capital. But again, that's a policy decision about what balance between spending it on operations and potentially leveraging some portion of that for additional capital. We're not making value judgment on how that would be used. What we've projected in these numbers is operations, but not additional debt.
I'm just wondering about operating costs. Obviously, as the railroad gets larger, there are further staffing needs and so on, and operating costs, but I'm just wondering if that will be looked at as a potential cost savings down the line as well, or attention will be, obviously you care about that, you're not going to ignore that, but I'm just wondering if that is in the plan as well to take a hard look at operating costs. And additional revenues from ridership, which I'm wondering about, because I don't think we've maxed out on the capacity of the system to be able to draw in employers and other users into the system too, so I guess I have questions about that as well.
Right.
Yeah, we're always looking at operating costs and trying to figure out ways of doing things better. We have some of the state funds that we get, we have utilized to buy equipment up at our rail operations facility that will replace some of the services that we're having to pay for. For example, you'll read in the document a couple examples of the wheel truing machine that we bought. We are having to send all our steel wheels to Utah to have them trued. And so by using the state money, we've spent $1 million on a machine that we can do it in-house. And so it's a one-time cost for a long-time saving, for savings going forward. And we have other investments that we've planned. So we are constantly working on ways to try to get our operating costs down. We were one of the first agencies to do pension reform. So we implemented our own pension reform before the state of California did it, and so that's a way to manage our labor costs, which are 50% of what we spend money on. The other thing I do want to clarify is if, when you read through the document, we have another chart that's not in our presentation that shows the operations to Healdsburg and Cloverdale. If you assume them happening in the next 10 years as a capital project, even though we don't have funds available to fund them, we are constantly seeking that funding from the state and others. So if we are able to get the grants to go farther north, we will be able to operate those. And so you'll see a graph in here that shows what these charts look like once you open Healdsburg and Cloverdale. So we've run a couple of different scenarios in here that you'll see. And then Sarah has another slide to show you what a 30-year looks like, so just so you know, we have a few more coming.
Sarah, just for clarification, what you're planning here on this restructuring is strictly the outstanding debt. You're not taking that out and doing any maxing out whatever the potential stream is as to the revenue stream for the additional 20 years.
That's correct. We're simply taking exactly what you said. We're restructuring the existing bonds, extending them to the end of the new sunset date.
Would it be possible to do another scenario that takes it maybe up to Healdsburg, and then so you have the long amortization period on the bond? Take it and see what it does, if it provides adequate capital to get us at least to Healdsburg, and then also then take care of then the operating. Again, all you're doing is taking an amortization period for the debt service, and that's what the cost reduction is. And I just don't know what the available funds are. Are those available funds adequate to do adequate capital improvement to get to anywhere, including you know, additional trains if that's needed, or capacity that would be needed in the likelihood that we have additional ridership?
I think what we have found is that we can't, with the operating costs that we are projecting going forward, we can't generate enough funds. But it might be useful is to get to the end of the slide, because we're going to show you some of the costs of those extensions. So let's maybe talk a little bit more when we get to the slide on those operating or those capital costs.
So what we've shown in this slide, which looks very similar to the last one, however, it is in fact a projection of, instead of a 20-year sales tax extension, this shows you a 30-year sales tax extension. Again, just keeping in mind that we're still only projecting out through 2035 in the chart, simply for reasons of readability. But the story is very similar. The only particular tweak we've made to the restructuring assumptions here is that rather than having the debt restructured out to 2049, we've extended that another 3 years out to 2052, not all the way out to the 30-year end of the 30-year sales tax extension, simply because we think issuing debt for a longer than a 30-year final maturity is just unduly costly. So we've added 3 years to the amortization of the restructuring, and that reduces the projected payments on the restructured debt service incrementally by about, you know, $300,000 more. So you'll see the payments are reduced by 12.5 versus the 12.2 million. Again, just providing a little more room in the revenue stream to do other things. The picture again, as you, you know, the call date is still the call date. The positive result, as you can see out through the end of the projection period, is just a little bit more positive. So your net revenue is increased. Available net revenue after payment of operating costs and debt service is marginally higher at $3.4 million starting in 2023. And then again, that does go, just grows a little bit, you know, grows from there as in the prior slide. So it looks very similar. But if you, if we had a chart, and perhaps in the strategic plan we have or could have such a chart to address the question, if you were able to see out to the 2049 to 2059 period, you would have some capacity in the back end to be able to, after 2052, really, when these bonds drop off, you would have some capacity to potentially have some additional principal amortizing out there. The balance is, of course, the ability or how to what extent you want to afford additional interest costs in the meantime, but that's really where, after these bonds mature, is where you have the most ability to place new debt and afford some additional capital. So there are scenarios we can look at as to what that could potentially build, and it does, of course, relate back to what are the operating costs you assume associated with whatever capital expenditure you're making.
This is the slide I wanted to get to talk about system expansion. How are we going to manage going north? So just to reiterate, our forecasts do provide the sufficient revenue we need to operate additional rail extensions and pathway, and our estimated operating costs right now for Healdsburg to operate those extra miles is $1.5 million, and then if we go to Cloverdale, added to that is an additional $3.2 million, and that's mostly about the labor that would be needed to go farther. We have hours of service limitations and things like that. But what this does for us, and this is, although it's, you know, we're challenged in being able to generate capital revenue, what this does is puts us in a really good position as far as all of the grant applications that we're working on going forward. We just put in one for some for our bridge, but what it does is it allows us to say we have the money to operate extensions if you will help fund the extensions, which is important to granting agencies. They won't give you money to go farther if they don't think you can afford to operate it. So for us, this is good news. We feel like even though we're challenged with generating revenue for everything we want to do, it's important that we're generating enough revenue to operate going north. Construction costs are going to be higher than our available revenue in both scenarios that we've run, although we are hoping to push forward a 30-year extension of the sales tax because we do believe there's a little more room for creativity in that future revenue stream. The costs are just going to be higher, but we're going to continue to seek grants. So we're going to prioritize completion of the path between Larkspur and Windsor, which is estimated right now to be $34.5 million. And then for rail, the numbers are Windsor to Healdsburg is $125 million. In order to go north, we need more DMUs, diesel multiple unit rail vehicles, and that's $44 million. We need a bigger rail yard if we get more rail cars, and that's $25 million. And then the costs from Healdsburg to Cloverdale is significant. That's $170 million. So you can see these numbers are pretty big. And so in looking at the model, and as Sarah and I have tried to run different scenarios, we just haven't been able to generate that kind of revenue, even with the restructuring. So our next steps, just we're going to stop in a minute and ask questions and we can talk about it, but our next step is to get input from you to make any changes that based on your input today. And then we'll come back in 2 weeks and review. And then after this committee has had time to think and give input, it will take the document and take it to the board, and they'll review as they are reviewing an expenditure plan and debating how to place the measure on the ballot for March 2020. So that's an overview of what you're going to find in the document. You know, there's a lot of words in there, a lot of things you already know. It's a lot of explanation of things that the public would need to know. But we feel like it's a good look forward. It puts us in a good place to be able to continue to try to figure out ways to go north. But the important thing is to preserve and operate the $600 million investment that the taxpayers have already made in the system, the over a million riders that have already ridden the trains. It's a path forward for sustainability. And unfortunately, I know some of you were worried about the headlines, that even headlines were focusing on the do-nothing scenario. And as you know, our plan is not to do nothing. Our plan is to go forward with the sales tax extension, to also prepare expenditure cuts if we need to in order to not have that scenario happen. So there's a couple different paths forward. We think the path forward, as we talked about our last meeting, is to put the extension of the sales tax, which, by the way, always needed to be extended, which you all know that. You know, we always needed the sales tax going forward, but we're just moving in 2020 rather than waiting until 2024 to extend the sales tax. So we'll stop. Do you have any questions?
Maybe a comment as opposed to questions, and it's probably more from the standpoint of getting the approval to do the extension, to do the tax extension from the voters. I think it's more an education process than anything, because, and it's clear in my mind, it's obviously you guys have done a lot of work, and separating operations from building to Windsor, building to Cloverdale, just making it clear to the voters what's going to be done. Because I think a lot of, in that article at least, and I don't know, they say what they want to say, but, we told you that we're never going to get to Cloverdale, and that, okay, fine. But just making sure that this ensures the sustainability of this system through, long past me. it's going to be around for a long time, so I think that if you can make that clear, people say, well, it's there, we've got it. Now we want to make sure we keep it. And I think that's the key message.
So I noticed in some earlier projections of ridership that when the Narrows is complete, we would lose a certain number of riders because people would go back to driving on the freeway rather than taking the train. And I think that completion date is expected to be about 2023. Did we make any adjustment in our ridership projections around that?
I don't think that's funded, though. The extension, the
Nevada Narrows. Whose projection was that?
Yeah, I don't.
Who has made such a projection?
I believe we made that projection early on, that there would be a dip about...
We've never made such a projection.
No. Never talked about ridership.
I don't think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think, even with the work that's being done now, is not going to complete the Narrows. There's still going to be gaps that are only two lanes. And I'm pretty confident that none of that those gaps have not been funded. They don't have funding to complete it. So it's a long way out. It's not going to be finished by 2023, I can tell you that. I mean, I'm pretty confident of that. And we have a number of contractors that we bank that have done work there, and they've told us, well, they've got these projects, but it only is a portion. So there's big gaps still between Novato and Petaluma to complete, and that, I don't think there's funding for any of that at this point. So, but that's, I may be wrong, but I think that's true.
I'm not aware. I mean, maybe long ago and far away that, people thought the Narrows was going to be the solution to the problem. But I mean, just in the last 5 years alone, if you look at the growth in traffic, you can't build enough freeways to solve the traffic problems in the Bay Area. You just can't. I mean, just from a gut level, every time they add a lane, it's full within a year. You know, I just don't see that as being an issue for us going forward, but I'm happy to research it further and see.
Actually, let me give you more data, just so you know, because what you said you guys need to really understand, you know, about he said and she said, this is, to be honest with you, what happens when you get to Ignacio? When you go southbound in the morning, what happens when you get to Ignacio?
Stops.
Stops.
Oh, the Highway 37 tie-up?
Yeah, what happens when you get there?
Yeah.
What?
It stops.
Stops.
Yeah, that's...
So this notion that if you build narrows, people are going to go back on a freeway?
No.
Your bottleneck is down there. So unless your plan is to go into 5, 6, 7 lanes in each direction, all the way, not just narrows, from traffic engineering point of view, if you get cars there faster, you actually exasperate the problem.
I think the solution at Novato, at the Ignacio, is the metering lamps.
No, I'm not talking about solution. I'm talking about the notion that if you build narrows, people are going to use 101. They're going to use 101, they get to Ignacio, they get stuck. So there is no such study or there is no such...
I hope you're right.
I know I'm right. It's traffic engineering.
Yeah, Dennis is fine. Dennis gets the gavel.
He gets the extra
box. I get the gavel?
No, Dennis. He says
Dennis gets the gavel. Can
I take you guys back to slide 10? This is really important for you to know this. After you're done, sorry. When you're done, I want to take you to slide 10.
All right. RM3 is in litigation right now. What happens if that doesn't come out satisfactorily?
I'm sorry, RM3.
If the RM3 money doesn't arrive to get us to Windsor, where are we?
I have an answer for you. You and another $1 billion worth of projects.
Pardon?
You and another $1 billion worth of projects that RM3 funds comes to a stop.
Right. They come to a stop.
Well, they come to a stop, and then MTC and state have to decide, do they want all these projects to stop or not?
Okay.
Now, remember, they have won 2 court cases. RM3 has not lost.
Sure. It's in the appeal process, and we expect that.
I understand, but I want us to have a full picture and not have the gloomy doomsday picture.
No. But I'm just saying, what does that do to our estimates of fair revenue and so forth if that doesn't happen the way we hope it happens?
Well, the only project it affects is the Windsor Civil Engineering Extension.
Yeah, and so I'm wondering how big the Windsor project figures in our fair revenue here.
I don't have it off the top of my head, but it's a very small... I mean, our fair revenues, unfortunately, are a very small portion of our revenues. I mean, we're really sales tax dependent. So, if the growth in the fair revenue in 2021 and 22 is... instead of 5%, it's going to be 3%. It's sort of a negligible problem.
It's tremendous.
Yeah. I personally would not be a huge problem for us.
Not a big deal. All right.
Yeah, I was going to call myself next. So can I? So thank you. A couple of different points, if I could. Always the question has to do with ridership. So back to he said, she said, who knows, whatever. It would be great to have an actual factual number of what we projected back in 08 as to ridership and to what our actual ridership is today. I would be curious about what increases in ridership you project whenever you complete the Larkspur connection, and then back to Steve's comment is, as you add milestones to the project, what kind of increase of riderships do we receive? So when you get to Windsor, what kind of increase that is? And again, we know our, that there's many people that have put out other documents that I received recently again about the ridership numbers that that Smart has published is not correct, that they received other ones. So I'm not sure where this person receives their information, but that has recirculated again recently, and I've gotten it back two or three different times and asked to explain why this person has different numbers than Smart put out. So that's out there. We need to address it, and that would be great. The other thing that we know around this table is that no public transportation system is self-sufficient. We understand that, but I don't think the general public still do. I would like to see if we could, back in 08, we had X number of dollars, which was going to be local dollars versus federal and grant money dollars that we thought. It is significantly less that we received. That shift has happened quite a bit, that it's more local than it has been federal or state or any other grants. I would like to have a historical perspective of what we projected back there, when back in 08, versus what the reality was. And then going forward, what we see. Because as we know, is that this sales tax has got to be a consistent revenue source for this project. So I'm not sure if you'll get 20 or 30 years out of this thing, but whatever that number is, if they're able to reauthorize it, we just need to know that this is a constant number that's going to come up. Either we put it, you know, 20 years or 30 years, we're going to have this opportunity, you know, 20 or 30 years from now to do it again. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, you're sort of talking about things that you've heard and that we need to counteract going forward.
Well, a factual, too. I mean, the ridership one, that's a constant one that I get asked all the time. How are the ridership numbers relative to what you projected?
Yeah, I mean, I'm reluctant to say we're going to go and do an analysis of projections.
You did 18 ridership studies. Did you know that?
I know you've done a lot.
No,
you?
Not us. Yeah. The first group, you guys did, you guys, I don't mean you. Yeah. The first, you did 18 ridership studies. Because every time you did a study, certain opponents of yours questioned that, so you did a second one. And then they didn't like that. They questioned that you did the third one. And the fourth. So we got 18 of them.
Right? Well, that also was part of the bond issue, because they were trying to get some. So it wasn't just strictly for litigation purposes, but that was all part of the bond issue.
No, my point is, whatever you projected of these 18 studies, right? And we're not here to question it. What we're putting out is the factual ridership. Here are two facts.
Yes.
Your revenue from ridership exceeds what your CFO budgets. Fact. And your ridership has been 1.4 million, as she pointed out, in last 2 years. This is fact. Whatever any one of those 18 studies did before, it was a transit planner's idea. These are the facts.
I think that the ones that the public probably relates to is more the one that has to do with the bond issue. Because the bond issue numbers are the numbers of which we financially base this source of funds for. So there's, if you're asking me as to what our ridership numbers are, what out of the 18 would I use, I'd say the ones that we had, were using whenever we were doing the bond issue.
I would just say that our ridership is about 14,000 a week, yep. Which is what, and you'll see that in the document, and you know, going forward, we see that growing. I mean, I think, you know, it's kind of like projection. You know, you can pay people for projections and ridership, but I think what Farhad is saying is, like, I don't think we should get dragged down into studies that were, you know, 15 years ago and try to tie to them, and we'll look at what other people are saying, but I think what we want to focus on is, you know, the communities that we're still trying to serve, and the growth that we're seeing is, you know, it's the world is growing. We're trying to grow the North Bay, and the economic benefit is what it is. And to your question about the self-sufficiency of transit, you know, if you, one of the messages that we need to get out, and I think you're right, is that, you know, if you look at what people pay for roads, you go buy a gallon of gas, or you spend $10 on a dollar on a gallon of gas, 40 cents of that is taxes to support the roads you're driving on. If you spend $100 on something, you know, 1 cent of that is going towards SMART. And is that worth it to you as a community? And so I think one of the messages that we do need to get out is the economic benefit of SMART. You have the riders of SMART who are 14,000 a week, but beyond that, you have the businesses that now have access to labor, and you have labor who now have access to their jobs. You know, we've worked with the school district to get teachers Echo passes, so the teachers, we've heard stories from teachers who say, I don't have to leave 2 hours before school starts anymore because now I can get the train and not have to worry about traffic. So I think rather than getting bogged down into the details of this study and that study, what I'm sort of agreeing with you in terms of what we need to get the message out, which is that this is an economic benefit to the community, and that you know, you have your riders and you have your fare revenue, but you have the region needs this. It's good for the environment. It's good for the economy. It's good for access to housing. We've just seen a lot of changes that are positive around the train, and that's kind of the message we need to get out, I think.
Yeah, excuse me, just a factual matter, and Sarah can correct me, but I don't believe there was any ridership studies done in connection with the bonds, because at that time, that really, I mean, it's relevant, but it was de minimis in terms of revenue and projection. The bondholders have they're going through the sales tax, and there was no need, I don't believe, to do any study, and it wasn't done. So you're not going to get more information from that.
There were older projections that we have used in the modeling that we did at the time the bonds were issued, but there was not a new ridership study done at the time, because, as people said, we're still not going to know. So there wasn't a desire to spend more money on another study that was still going to be flawed at the end of the day when we finally opened the system. So you're absolutely right. There wasn't a study.
But there was a ridership number that was used in that modeling. That, I think, is a base point of where you're going
to
go.
Yeah, I mean, just to put it in context, you know, again, if we look at the particulars, I mean, we can certainly pull out the OS that was provided at the time and see what we had said about, you know, what we thought fare revenue was. But it's, you know, it's not a significant amount within the context of the overall revenue. And to your point, it's not the pledge that the bondholders were looking to anyway. But,
yeah, we were recently re-reviewed by Standard & Poor's, who reaffirmed the bond rating. And I think going forward, it really, in the markets, you know, that's what we'll focus on is just the sales tax revenue and whether the estimates are reasonable. That's what they care about in the bonds.
Steve?
Briefly on the same topic, and then I have one more question to ask. I guess the question is, to what degree our ridership meets the capacity of the system and what we can do to increase that? Are there more things we can and should be doing to make sure we can make this system more accessible to the general public? Is a question. I realize it's not yet a major part of the revenues that we receive, but it is important to the counties we serve as well. So that is something I think is useful to at least, I know you are doing a lot in that respect, but it would be nice to be able to see that. Secondly, I read, and correct me if I'm wrong in this, I believe the newspaper article said that the projections did not factor in a recession. And I'm seeing that your projections say that a 3% growth would factor in another recession. So I'm a little confused, and we never know what the future holds. And as we are talking right now in very uncertain times, you can't help but think about that. So what would you suggest?
Yeah, I think what I don't know what the newspaper's trying to do, but what we're trying to do is make reasonable assumptions about the sales tax going forward. And there will be a recession. Nobody knows when. Nobody knows, you know, will it be this year? Will it be next year? And so did we model one view that picks a year and says in this year we'll have a recession? We did not do that. What we did was we looked at the history of the recessions that we, as a district, even before SMART existed, we looked at sales tax going all the way back 30 years, and we looked at the last, you know, 20 years, and when I say that we have modeled a recession, the 3% growth includes the greatest recession that's happened since the 1920s. So a 3% projection does model a recession. It just doesn't pick which year it's going to happen. So if a recession were to happen next year or the year after, it's not that nothing would change and you would just take this huge revenue loss. It's that, first of all, how big would the recession be? Well, historically, it would, you know, be less than 5%, which is, you know, much less than our operating reserve that we've set aside, and that's the point for having an operating reserve. That's the point of not letting scenarios that draw down your reserve happen. So you keep the reserve for those years, and then you also, every public agency does this, in a recession you tighten your belt. You know, you look at your labor costs, you look at your equipment costs, and you adjust. So if the recession happens next year, we would do all of those things. We would know that we had a reserve to get us through, so we saw how, you know, the impact was going to affect us, and we would adjust accordingly. So we haven't run a scenario that picks a year. What we've done is looked at the history and said, going forward, we think this is reasonable because it 3% includes that historic event. So it's, in our view, it's a prudent assumption. It's not aggressive. It's not overly conservative. We feel it's the right one, but we're, of course, open to whatever the committee suggests.
Well, I don't know any more than you do about the recession and when it might happen. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm
if somebody could tell me that.
just to follow up on that, you know, in the Shane, the strategic plan from 2014, at the very end of it, has two excellent things that address that. There's Sarah Hollenbeck has a memo, and also this Robert Eiler, exactly talking about that you don't know when it's going to happen. I mean, in good words, explaining it. So you might look at that. And in addition, Eiler's thing has the other issue raised, what percentage of SMART's capacity is being utilized at any given time? He addresses that model exactly. So you should look at that.
I don't know where those are.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's in the strategic plan 2014.
Oh, okay.
It's the last four pages.
Okay. Thank you. I'll check that out.
Seriously, those are both excellent things.
Yeah, I can send those to you.
Why, I got copies here.
You don't keep it by your bed.
I actually know where it is. There it is.
There they are.
In my file. Thank you.
You can keep that. It's pages 78 through 82.
No, I'll find it.
And it might be nice just to send those out to the folks that are raising these questions.
The point is, it was addressed at the time.
So the question is, should this be updated or should it be addressed in the new strategic plan?
Might append these letters to the new strategic plan.
Well, you can't. Sarah could write a new one, but Robert Eiler was commenting on the Beacons economic study. And so with five-year history, I guess the question is, even though the public doesn't understand that it was all thought about ahead of time, are we proving to them that we thought about it, or what's the relevance of something like that going forward? And that's what you have to
think. The latter is the...
Yeah. You might throw, if not a letter at the end, in the body, say, these were studies, things are still consistent, refer to that if you have, or something. You know.
I think we'll take a look at it and see if we need to add some references to it, and Sarah and I, we'll look at it and see if we need to beef up that section in
the... The other thing to point out is that when a recession hits, there are hungry contractors that are able to do things that you have a hard time doing during strong years. and we might be able to get to Healdsburg for a lot less.
Right. We were very successful when we were working on trying to figure out how to get as far as possible back in 2011. It was very helpful to us, the bidding environment.
And the experience on Highway 101 is that they were able to get a lot more done because they got some very good construction bids.
Question, Aaron, Sarah, how would you like to, as we read through this document over the next 2 weeks and have ideas and questions, how would you like this board to address them to you? Would you like us to email you, to contact you, to save them from 2 weeks from now? How would you like us to proceed?
I think you could email me in the meantime, or you could save them up and just be prepared in 2 weeks to mention changes you would recommend before it goes to the board. You could do both.
I'm going to ask you a question. The next session we have is our last session to give recommendations. Will we see a final draft before it goes to the board, or is there...
The plan was for that to be the final session, but if you want, we could have another session before it goes to the board. We just have to do it sort of quickly because we're on a quick time frame.
I'm just wondering, as we are making a recommendation, whether we will see the final recommendation prior to it being delivered.
What we could do is just plan for one more meeting after the next meeting. If you want to do that, we could...
I guess we can decide at that.
Reserve a date in case?
I'm suggesting mechanically, because that pushes the board up in terms of its approval, too, if we take longer. I mean, you were saying that if we circulate comments, whoever, by email to the group ahead of time, it's not that that becomes a meeting or anything, but you may be able to prepare something for the meeting in 2 weeks that purports to be final, because people have made comments. If there's a change or two, then we're not worried about seeing those changes maybe before it goes to the board. But I agree with you. We should be approving a document in some form, I think.
Okay.
I mean,
yeah.
All right, agree that what we'll do is make comments to you between now and 2 weeks from now,
okay,
with the hope that you'll come and incorporate those type of recommendations as needed or comments made, and that we would have a draft of proposed, and any changes from there we'll deal with at the next meeting, and we could even do that via email as to a concurrence as to the final draft.
Yeah,
I would also,
or CC.
The comments can go to us. It's not illegal under the Brown Act or anything. Everybody, you CC everybody, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm planning to, if I have a comment, and send it to you.
I think we can certainly take input by email. Yeah, that's not a Brown Act violation.
Yeah.
Just one last comment. Could we get the final draft prior to the meeting?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I apologize that we didn't get it to you sooner. We were working on it until the last minute. It's a big document.
It's just a lot to digest.
It's a lot to digest. Yeah. I agree.
Farhad, do you want to go back to this?
Yes, I wanted to point out to you, this is the unfortunate part that for those of you who saw Marine IJ headline that SMART goes broke by 2024. This is what happened when brilliant financial minds tried to do an English PowerPoint and newspapers tried to sell newspapers. So you put those two together. So the word that it was used when we made the presentation to the board is when it says unrestricted reserve, we use the word funding balance because that's what these financial wizards use.
Right.
And when down here they said funding balance diminished, they didn't understand the word funding balance, they understood the word funding, and they decided that you go broke here.
That's capital.
And that was the story, that you go broke in 4 years. And of course, in selling newspapers, that's a very good story. Unfortunately, it's not true. So for them, unfortunately. So just so you know, IJ has redone their story. That story you can't find anymore. Mm-hmm. There is a correction, but it doesn't mean the damage wasn't done. Yeah. The damage was done, right? And they apologized, they've redone the story, there is a correction. And we learned that no more financial talks, we're going to start putting things in English, even though it's a financial document, because a reporter might or might not understand funding balance. So that's why we've changed that to reserve the words. So I wanted you as COC know, so you can talk about it out there, right? And IJ understood that the title was entirely false, fake, untrue. The first paragraph of the story has been corrected as well. The rest of the story, once you would read it, I thought it was correct, but it was, right? The story. So I wanted to bring that to your attention, because some people just read the headlines and nothing else, right? So this scenario, I want to make sure we understand, is one thing. The biggest thing you need to celebrate, because you've been with us from beginning, way before my time, right? So here is when we opened our doors, right? 2017. So we built you an entire organization that did not exist. We built you 44 miles of rail, 18 miles of bike path. We opened our doors. Here is the story. We did all of that, and we built you over $63 million of reserve. See the beginning fund balance? 41 million. We opened our door with that fund balance, correct? Fair? And a 17 million. We built you a system, we built you an organization, and we gave you, we staff, $60 million reserve, which, as Sarah and Aaron show, has been able to sustain you throughout these years. Why did we do that? Because we knew when you start opening your doors, you're going to have this deficit. We knew that. That's why we built you $60 million. That's why we're saying we don't want to wait and do nothing and run out of reserves and say, now what? We're showing you we don't want that. We want to preserve this. And then you would say, how would you do that? Well, renewing early, right, preserves you down here and starts building your fund balance. Now we call unrestricted reserve back on. So I wanted you to kind of see that, because none of these is captured because it's too complicated in a story of headlines, right? But it is what it is. We have to deal with those realities. But I wanted you to know that. And if you go look at the IJ story now, it's
okay, Farah, now that you brought up this, then you're going to have to explain one other number then to me at least, as a bean counter, as I understand it. So that operating revenue, why do I have decreasing operating revenue from 18-19 to 19-20?
Go back to your chart, because that's very good.
I can explain
that.
We have one-time revenues. We've had some one-time revenues that have moved the operating revenue a little bit.
Would this be grant funds? This have it over?
It's actually things like land sales. We've had some significant, we had sightings that we sold that we could lead to a $2 million bump. We've had a couple of years of those, so that's the biggest reason for some of that.
And what do you project in 2021?
So in 2021, so we take the one-time revenues out when we go forward. We don't, assume that those one-time sales, but there is one other one-time revenue related to Railroad Square that I think we've projected in, is it in 2021? It's in 2021. So in that year, that's the only other one-time revenue that we've projected going forward, because that deal has already been signed.
It's technically not operating revenue, it's one-time revenue. All right.
It's one-time revenue, but it rolls into operating
revenue. Can I ask you a question? I think he's asking an excellent question.
Yeah.
Instead of saying operations revenue or operations expense, this is agency.
Yeah, what we were trying to do.
You
yes,
see, I think the mistake yes. I just noticed we made. When we say operations, you're thinking operations. Yep. We don't mean operations,
yeah.
do we? We mean agency. Yeah. And agency revenue and expense, of course, fluctuates based
right.
on different things. That's what we need to grow.
Right.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Alrighty, now that we've gone through our accounting lesson, how are we doing?
No, I mean, this is important
good.
because
yeah.
this is
smart,
what the press took
too.
Off.
Yeah.
This is where they drew the line,
yeah.
right? And then that becomes the headline, so I want to make sure.
Yeah.
And we're going to explain this to the board
yeah.
as well.
So if you did operating revenue and then you had one time, you know, things, that would be great. Just that would make it really simple. But.
I think I'm just going to, after today, throw the slide away.
Yeah, obviously.
No, we just really, I mean, that's why this is a healthy discussion because, you know, if people like you who are familiar are asking that, then we need to do a better job explaining it. And using one wrong word can create that. So,
yeah, again, the IJ is not the only one that's been very well. And, you know, those articles haven't been positive, and then the letters to the editors have not been supportive either. So we have a lot of opportunity ahead of us. So with that, any other comments?
I have one question that I wanted to ask. Maybe we want to give time for any public comment.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to go back to the cost of the system expansion. One of the debates that the board had and that we wanted to get your input on is, you know, we talk about in the document, you'll see we have a discussion of the funding sources that we think will be available to go north. There's significant state revenues available. There are other funding sources that we've identified. What we haven't done in the document is try to guess at what year we would get those grants, because we just didn't think it was prudent to do that. But we know there's a lot of debate around going north. When you have to tell us when, and I'm just interested in your opinion on trying to identify dates when those are just projections that could be wrong. And what we don't want to do is mislead people and say we think by this date we'll get there. But I just wanted to hear your opinion on those things. That's the other question I have for you.
Who wants to start?
Well, if anything, it's a range. That's the best you can do.
Right.
And is that helpful? I mean, I guess that's...
I mean, you may have no opinion. I just wanted to raise it in case you did.
I have a very strong opinion. I think that this is the issue, is that if you're asking me as a voter to extend something and you're not telling me when you're going to deliver and what you're going to deliver and when you're going to deliver it, I'll give you a delivery of what I'm going to say is no until you tell me what you're going to do. That's the response. And I've only learned this through my four prior times of trying to pass this measure, that unless I am explicit as to what we're going to do and how we're going to do it and when we think we can do it, I would rather have assumptions there as saying, based on this, that, whatever, this is what we think we can do. And the assumptions are being the key part. So the person from Healdsburg says, I'm not going to vote for this because you're going to tell me when I'm going to be there. Or the person from Cloverdale, you got to say, assuming that this happens, this is what our best projections would be. And without that kind of hope and promise, I think that it's really tough.
I would agree with Dennis, but I also think maybe it'd be good to have enough asterisks to explain the assumptions and where they came from.
Can I ask you a question? And so like you would say Windsor to Healdsburg, I'm asking, assuming we get $125 million, it'd be done in 2000 XYZ. And then will they not hold you to XYZ? And that becomes the headlines of the newspaper when you miss it?
That's a challenge.
So tell me, you're the experts. Where's your funding source going to come for that $125 million? So it's just going to be a combination of SB1, it could be part of RM3, it could be some other kind of measures. What you currently are out there are looking for funds to get there.
Correct.
And so whatever those sources are, these are our hopes and wishes of where we think that we're going to get that funding source from. Also, that number is a really funny number on construction, isn't it, as it relates to this bridge. So if you, you know, isn't that a big wow as to the cost of that bridge? I mean, if you get a Galveston bridge type of a deal, isn't there a big swing in potential cost savings or expansion as to how one does that bridge across the Russian River?
No, all of those are correct. Our question, what we're trying to learn is, if we put a date there, and
you got to put all the assumptions.
Nobody's going to remember the assumptions. They're going to remember you said 2024 X, and in 2024 this gentleman is going to come in and say, "Where is my extension?" That's what we're debating is. Which one is better, not having anything there or have something there with a lot of asterisks and qualifications?
Or say the earliest possible date. I don't know. This is your...
That's what we don't know. We're asking you what you...
This is a tough question. Yeah. I don't know what you guys think, but this is...
You got my two cents. So
you're saying it's better to do it than not do it.
Yeah, but you're putting all your qualifications as to based on the following assumptions and revenue sources.
Got it.
And this is where I'm going with it.
Well, you know that, I mean, the general areas that you're going to be seeking grants from, I mean, that's, you know, SB1
yes.
and RM3 and, you know, State Fed and stuff. And, I mean, maybe is this dumb to say, to Healdsburg within 3.5 years from of receipt from money from these sources or something. I mean, you know how long it takes to build. You just don't know when you're going to get the money. So if you tie the time to the receipt of the money, which may not happen, but at least you're giving, I don't know. I don't know if that's a compromise. Or,
And see, that's the same thing. We're back to the bonding question is that if you're maxing out that bond or not, and if there was an adequate capital to carry it to point A or point B. So if you're telling me I'm going to do getting down 5 miles from Windsor north is all I'm going to get from my new bond, and I'm not going to get to you know, Healdsburg with the rebonding, then okay, that's it. I would have thought that there would have been adequate funds to get somewhere, but I don't know. Especially with the change in interest rate, the debt service coverage has got to be different than it was before because we were just a wing and a prayer before. There's a lot of other things that were, you know, tougher on the initial bond offering than I would assume the redo of the bond. But
it's
I
think because it's a sales tax pledge, really the investors were only ever looking at the sales tax. We didn't even have operating projections in the offering document because they're not interested in that. It's not what they're buying. And that really hasn't changed that much. I mean, sales tax has grown. I think what is limiting capacity to a certain degree is the cost of operations, which is, you know, different from what was projected initially. So we're just working through those, push and pull of, if you build something where you have to operate it, that costs money, that diminishes. It's not a bonding capacity issue with respect to coverage. It's an affordability issue of, operations plus debt service needs to fit within the available revenue, and that's what we're trying to balance.
As I remember, though, the debt service coverage was higher in this because of the initial offering. I can remember a meeting regarding that, but maybe that was... I know that we had a discussion over that. I know there was a whole meeting devoted strictly for that alone. But, that said, you're the experts. Yes, Steve?
I'm just wondering if next time we meet, we could take a look at maybe two possible sets of language and see what you believe is accurate. We have to be accurate. We can't mislead anybody. Nobody wants to do that. But at the same time, it'd be interesting to see what we can say that we believe is true, and whether it, in the end, whether we're able to put a date on things or do it like you suggested. I'm a little on the fence about how to do it, but I know we need to do it in a way that, conveys to the voters and the people what's realistic. So I don't know. What do you think, Eric?
I think you need to give them with assumptions and everything else.
This might be a good time to have public comment.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yes, ma'am.
So having sat through this since October now and seeing how this training got built, I think the general public doesn't understand a lot of the grant process, funding sources, you know, that you can't get to there until you get to here. I mean, I just think there's a huge learning curve when we start looking and taking this piece by piece. So I think Dennis is right in that you have to somewhere promise that training. Because we know that we get there. But in our bubble, we're fighting that 28% who doesn't believe. So how are we going to use language that says, explains more the process, but how trains, how it got built? So I just think that's really important that we explain how it works. I don't know how you do that in language. It's unfortunate you have to deal with facts. You know, and I think the facts support the project and the process and the vision.
Yes.
There's quite a few places where the people in California know where they use the concept of self-help counties, self-help school districts. And to the extent that you present this as a gathering the seed money to get our federal and state money share back to Sonoma, the seed money, and that you can say that this is just the necessity of seed money to get the grants and rely on, let the public know that that's how we get our tax dollars back.
That's good. I like that.
One other question that's sure to be asked is if the extension measure fails in March, then where do we tighten the belt in order not to go broke some year out there?
You see, in the document, we basically have two action items for the strategic plan. One is to move forward with the sales tax extension, and two is for staff to prepare for what would happen if the measure didn't pass. And it's a broad statement saying that staff should start preparing, and our plan as staff is to do that, and we would come to the board afterwards with those recommendations. So that's something we'll have to work on between now and March. So that's a good suggestion, and we do mention that in the document.
Yes, sir.
Well, on a different subject, to the extent that program, as I view it, going back 30 years, when Peter Calthorpe spoke in Santa Rosa, he described building a dozen pedestrian pockets, building community around rail without automobiles, walkable communities, and a series of them. And that was the image sold to a lot of the architects and a lot of people of a certain political persuasion. And to the extent that you would be building a series of communities, rather than providing an alternative, a park and ride alternative to freeway, you miss an opportunity to stimulate the interest of those people who originally got behind the whole idea of rail, which was a design of community and design of walkable community. And I see none of that being pressed, and I don't see much of it in action. The largest walkable community is built on any of our stations that I see. Is just a mile from here, where they took a fourth of the lot right across the tracks from it, a fourth of the 5 acres, and put apartments on it. But that's the only one I see within a block of any of our stations that has actually been built. And we need to be working on selling the image of walkable communities in each of our station areas.
I think that actually all the cities in their general plans actually have incorporated those TOGs. And so you'll see that in Warner Park, their whole plan of their new station is all built around that Calthorpe study type of idea and the TOD theory. Railroad Square is all that whole segment too. And so I think that it takes time to do that, but I think around those stations, that concept and idea is being incorporated. It's incorporated within the general plans of each one of those communities.
Well, what I see here at Corona is two-car suburbia being plopped down right there on the same lot where our 1896 rail station was. And to the extent that we bring out a two-car Suburbia right there, rather than a multi-story train-oriented community, we basically shoot ourselves in the foot.
All right. Any other comments? Otherwise, we're going to adjourn at 9 o'clock and see everyone on the 29th.
Thank you.
Thank you.